You are listening to the Crown Refs Podcast, the audio experience for basketball officials.
Serve the game.
Thanks for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast, episode 146, the audio experience for basketball officials. Really appreciate every single ref who has interacted with the Crown Refs content, whether that's listening to the podcast, watching our YouTube channel, checking out our daily stories on Instagram, our podcast, video clips on Facebook and LinkedIn, our written articles on our website, or our weekly newsletter. However you choose to consume us, we are honored that you took the time out of your day to learn about refereeing as we try to humanize officials and push the culture forward. Hopefully you've enjoyed the previous 145 episodes, as we really feel like we're just warming up. Still feels like layup lines, just getting started. As you continue to improve as an official from the content, we plan on continuing to raise our level and deliver the most valuable referee content on the internet. This episode features Fabian Jara and is titled The Rule Book Versus the Art, When to Apply a Rule as Written. A lot of newer officials, as they study the science of the rules, the black and white, then struggle with the application of it, which is that larger gray area of the game that really separates the goods from the greats. In this episode, we also talk about the importance of using rule-based explanations when addressing coaches, because if we don't, then we're just communicating on a pedestrian level, and anyone can argue about a call on a pedestrian level. The difference maker is the one who can speak on an expert level, because coaches are not equipped to have those type of conversations. We also talk about camp prep with camp season around the corner. Some keys we discussed are how to properly take feedback from observers and better communicate the questions to them instead of sounding like a yeah, but ref. I know that's a pretty popular topic during camp, making sure we come off humble, but still show our passion and energy. So hope you enjoyed this episode. Do me one last favor before you listen. Have a great rest of your day. Fabian Jara, thank you for calling. You are live on the Crown Refs Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Very nice to connect with you.
Absolutely. I know we were going back and forth. You have a few questions and plays that have been running through your mind. Talk to me.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, with the camp season around the corner, one of the things for me, you know, I'm trying to break into the college ranks myself. And one of the things I always get, it's conflicting for me, is when you come off the court and the observer, usually, you know, Division I official, usually a college official, and usually at the higher levels, gives you information, you know. And I know that the yes, but is not appropriate. And I understand that because, you know, I'm learning and they're giving me information. So my conflict is when the information they're giving us is not as per the rule, right? And I always hear that with any assigner at any level. If you stick by the rule, no one can ever, you know, you stay out of trouble when you stick by the rule. Now, you know, I never played at the highest levels. I've coached, I've played in high school. And the reason why I bring that up is because I understand there's nuances to the game, right? So, yes. If a player is in the paint for more than 3 seconds, technically violation, right? However, if the kid's heel is in the lane and the ball just made it past the division line, is that an opportunity for me to call 3 seconds? No, I believe that's a game interrupter, right? But nowhere in the rule book does it say that. Okay, fine. So now that I gave you the background of my question, let me give you an example. So the other night I was doing a high school varsity game, and I've been working on my my clock recognition, particularly shot clock. And there's a shot, change of possession. The team rebounds, the offensive team rebounds the ball, and they're on offense now. So the defense becomes offense. Fast break. I look up, I'm the lead. I look up and I see that the shot clock is still at, like, I think it was at 21. but it's a fast break. It's a 2-on-1 fast break, and I'm booking it. And I notice the clock is at 21 when he gets the ball. I look up, it's at 19. I'm looking, he's coming fast break, and I'm saying to myself, as per rule, I'm supposed to blow it dead because the shot clock now has gone for 2 seconds or 3 seconds, and I gotta correct it. But it's a fast break. So I swallow my whistle. I get to the lead. I beat the players, and the player, what he does is he shoots, airballs it, of course.
Yep.
Gets his own rebound and kicks it out. So at this point, I quickly blow my whistle. I look up, and I think it was at like 11 seconds, right? So in my head, it's like, that's easy. That's 10-second differential. I look at the table, and I tell them. I'm like, put it to 20. Okay. No harm, no foul. No one really cared. So I call my mentor. He's a college official. He does Division II. I call him up. I'm like, hey, Carl, what do you got on this play? And so this is, you know, he proceeds to tell me. Yes, as per rule, this is the situation. You got to blow it dead and correct it. And I said, right. So now if I do that, the coach goes berserk, right? And in essence, rightfully so, goes berserk. And now we have a potential situation where I got to tee up a ref, a coach, because, you know, he gets out of line. Meanwhile, I'm the one, you know, I'm calling it by rule. So I don't know if I'm making sense to you. I know I'm being very wordy with it, but.
No.
So if I get that kind of feedback, so I'm asking you the question, and I know you're a very experienced official, so hopefully you have, you know, you could give me your take on it. But the ultimate question is, going into camp season, and I get feedback like that from an official, I know I can't say yes, but there's a yes, but, right? So what do you have to say about that, Paul?
Great question. Absolutely great question. And something that's been on the minds, I'm sure, of thousands of officials, right?
Right.
When the young, inexperienced camper goes to camp and, you know, has all the rule implications in his mind, is very black and white about a particular situation, you know, thinking it's obvious, this is black and white. And then you get new feedback from an experienced official who has worked his way up, all the way up the ladder, and is now officiating on a higher level and is kind of giving you that gray area. And it can be confusing when we're looking at something black and white and saying, this is A and this is B. It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
But when we introduce the gray, I mean, most of this game is gray.
Right.
You know, the black and white is the science. The gray is the art and how we apply all of the language in the rule book. Just think of this. If we reffed exactly like the rule book said, how awful would the game be?
It'd be terrible. I agree.
It would be terrible. It would be unwatchable.
Right.
So if we were robotic with our black and white, you know, skills and rule knowledge, then it would be nonstop whistles every play.
True.
So the beauty of this game, and the ones who work it really well, are those who know when to put air in the whistle, when to let the play go, when to, you know, bring in a rule that you're backed up by, and when to enforce it and when to let it go. Sometimes the best call isn't always the right call. So as far as your question on, you know, how do you communicate that? You don't want to be a yeah, but guy, right?
Correct.
No one likes a yeah, but guy. When a clinician gives you feedback and your first two words are yeah, but.
Right.
So everybody listening, let's eliminate that from our vocabulary. So. But there's another layer to this. Well, the clinicians are not going to be 1,000% right all the time. And everything they say doesn't mean there shouldn't be any follow-up questioning or communication. There's multiple layers to discuss. So you just need to communicate that effectively without coming off like a yeah, but guy. Just look curious and interested. Maybe give them a compliment. That's a great point. Let me ask you this. Let me take it a step further. What would happen if this was the play? But at the end of the day, you're just there to perform and learn as much as you can, not really have a debate in that moment.
Right.
You want to take what he's saying and then go debate it and look into it more with your inner circle. And it doesn't have to end there. But, you know, he's there for you're only listening to him for a few minutes. So just he's got other campers to speak to. So just take what he has and, you know, not to say you can't follow up. There's been plenty of times where I followed up and I did it the way I told you. I would just try to, you know, be respectful and just ask an honest question without coming off like a I know it.
Got it.
You know, we're here. We're spending a lot of money at camp. Yay, there's questions. We have some questions.
Right, right,
you know?
Right.
It's okay to ask. Correct. But don't be that guy who's asking a question off of every feedback you get.
Got it.
Because then it's just then that becomes a trend. And it's like, all right, this guy, you know,
right.
Yeah, he's hungry. He loves the game. But he's yeah, but
yeah.
Even though he's right. not. Yeah, but
right.
You know,
right.
As far as the shot clock play that you referenced. Now, if this is a just take me through this. Is a scoring opportunity? Where's the ball exactly?
So when it was a rather long rebound. It was a long shot, long rebound close to the 3-point arc at the, like top of the key. So the player, the he was on defense. Now he's on offense. He turns and goes. So I was the lead. I was the obviously trail becoming the new lead, and two defenders quickly just, you know, they're going to defend the paint. So it's him going up against two guys, the guy he was with and another guy who just booked it down the court. So it was a potential 2-on-1, 1-on-2 break, I should say.
Oh, 1-on-2.
1-on-2, right. But, you know, he's got his trail player coming with him. But he was ahead of his pack. So, like I said, shot clock was at 21 when he rebounded. I look up 21. I take off. So I made it like a thing. And I think I heard you or someone on one of your podcasts said, pick lines on the court. And every time you get to that line, look up at the clock. And I've been doing that. So I looked at it when I got to the foul line extended, and it was at 19. Then I looked up when I turned around. I got to the lead. I didn't look up at the clock. I was watching the play. And by the time he shot, airballed it, it was 11 seconds, and then I stopped the clock. So I knew it was 10 seconds had elapsed from the time he rebounded to the time he regained his missed shot, air ball, right? Yeah. And then so yeah. I went and I put 20 seconds on the shot. I talked to my partner first, obviously. Stopped the clock, beep, beep, beep. My time. I went to my partner. I said, hey, 10 seconds went by. They didn't reset. And now, mind you, as I'm running down the court, I'm showing the table the reset, you know, signal with my hand up. And I'm trying to get them my attention, but they missed it. So I was aware.
But what's that going to do in the moment? The count is still going to be off.
True. Well, for me, I'm saying to myself, at least it'll reset somewhat closely to where it's supposed to be, no?
I don't necessarily think it's applicable. I mean, they missed resetting it. So if they reset it late, we're still off regardless.
True.
I think you did the right thing in this situation. The key here is once you recognize where the ball is and the fact that we have an error on the shot clock, you have to determine if that player has a great chance of scoring within like a few seconds.
Okay.
You know, if it's a 1-on-2 fast break, I might stop it there if I don't think he has a lane or an advantage to take a layup opportunity. Mm-hmm. Again, the only thing I'm thinking in that moment is, are they about to score? If I can say yes, I'm going to let it go. And I'm going to do the math in my head, just like you did. And if they are unsuccessful and we have an air ball and a rebound, which means they're going to back out, then we just stop the game. You did the math in your head. Hey, Johnny, please put 11 back up on the clock. It never reset.
Right. Got it.
Thank you. I think you did it perfect. Now, in this, let's take a different scenario. Same formation on the court. Let's say it's now a 1-on-3 break, and you notice it right away. Then what are you going to do there?
That's different. Now, I think his chances of scoring there are much limited. So I would be in the right to reset the clock.
Yeah, and this is where feel for the game comes in. I mean, if you want to go by the book and then kill that play right away, let's say it's a 1-on-0 fast break.
Oh, forget it.
You're going to kill the play. Right. I know, but if I mean, it's a gray area. On a lot of these plays are gray.
And does it also depend, you think, on if it's the star player on the court?
No, I don't. Yo, bro, stop paying. Everyone, you know what I mean by attention to star players. No, but I don't. I do, but I don't, because I don't pay attention to any players. I don't know who's good. I don't know who's the leading scorer. I don't care. I really don't. And I know I'm in the minority on this. Too many officials are talking about talents of players, which style they run, which defenses they play, what their record is, the rivalry between the two schools, what the last matchup score was, what the coach
his style, like, how about we apply all of that thinking and energy into officiating and getting the play right? That's our duty. Players are not out there saying, oh, did you know that ref, he likes to call blocks more majority of the times than charges. So take that into consideration. They don't say
right,
that stuff.
Right.
I don't see how it helps us.
No, I agree with you. But the only reason why I even bring it up, and I mean, to be very honest, I don't look at it that way. But I'm looking at this situation, right?
I'm not saying right. I think that's a good point to hammer home.
Like in this situation, it's a one-on-two break. It doesn't matter who the player is. I think he's an opportunity. It's a one-on-three break, but this is the top player in New York City. And I think, you know, so you're saying don't even bring that into the conversation. In other words, one-on-three, any player one-on-three, his chances of scoring are lower than if it was a one-on-two, one-on-one, or one-on-nothing is what you're saying, right?
Yes, but I still have context. And after watching, you know, a little bit of the game, I'm going to have a feel, okay, this kid is very athletic. So, again, this comes down to feel.
Got it.
You know, it's the best thing I
can say. Yeah, no, you're right.
Best thing I can say. I don't want to confuse you too much. But, yeah, okay, if the best player on the team has wide open, yeah, that we may look at it slightly differently. But I'm speaking more big picture scenario. We shouldn't be paying too much attention to the talents of
very
players
true.
And tendencies
very
and
true.
Stuff.
Very true. Very true.
Because we wind up bringing in more information, and now we have preconceived notions on what we're about to call
right.
Like that causes us to go fishing.
You know, and what I'm about to bring up may seem like I'm changing the conversation. However, I think it falls under the umbrella of what you personally are trying to achieve in your endeavors of this podcast and educating officials, mm-hmm. is that fomenting a better relationship between us and the coaches, right? And I think that mm-hmm. one of the biggest problems that coaches – first of all, the fact that they don't know the rules is one big problem. But is their mm-hmm. complaint is that we as officials, or they believe that we as officials don't understand the game, right? In other words, they think we're just going by the rules. And that's not true. However, I think that if we do take into consideration the game, we take into consideration time and score. Like I had another conversation with someone else, and I said, well, you know, you got to take into consideration time and score. Where does it say that in the rule book? I'm like, well, what do you mean? Well, nowhere in the rule book does it say mm-hmm. time and score is a factor. And I yeah. beg to differ, because I think that we have to take into consideration time and score. For example, right? It's a tight game, 2-point game. We're under a minute. Listen, we're not guessing, right? And we should never be guessing. But specifically in that final minute, we cannot guess, man. Because if you are guessing and you're making a call, now all of a sudden you may change the way this game ends. And then if you're guessing, if you're not guessing and that was a foul, then call a foul, right? Don't worry about mm-hmm. what the coach did. I had that situation on a girls' game that I did. Really good game. Basically, it was a two-point game. Team B, Team A's at the line, free throw, misses the free throw, long rebound, opposite. I'm the lead. It goes opposite my end, so it's not really in my PCA. Team B rebounds the ball. They're winning by two, so Team A now is in foul mode, as they call it, and the player mm-hmm. instead of like going for the ball and fouling or you know doing. She pushes the other player so hard, Paul. She literally slams her head into the wall, and she's down on the floor crying. So my partner comes up foul. I come up foul, right? We come together, and she goes, what do you think? Intentional? My partner was a female. Do you think intentional or, you know, flagrant? I go, yeah. I said, yeah. I mean, that was a hard foul. It wasn't going for the ball. So we upgraded to intentional. The coach goes ballistic, right? And 3 seconds on the clock. 2-point game. So he's saying to me, well, you're taking it out of my girl's hands. You're taking it out of our hands. I said,
I would argue that girl took it out of her team's hands. That's where we need to shift the conversation.
And that's my point. I learned this from your podcast. I don't address statements. I'll address a question. So all I said to the coach,
Can I just add a layer? It's impossible to just say I'm not going to address statements.
I'll tell you what I said to him. I didn't ignore it. What I said to coach, I said, coach, we're going to have to disagree on this one because the safety of the player, in my eyes, the safety of all the players are more important. So he comes back at me and goes, hey, you don't get the game. So now that I crossed the line with what I said. And I said, I said, coach, instead of you taking time telling me what I should be calling and not calling, maybe you can talk to your players about not fouling in that way with 3 seconds on the clock with a potential to win the game so that we don't have an intention. So how dare you tell me how to do my job? And I said,
how dare I? He's insecure.
I said, coach,
insecure.
You spent the last minute telling me how to do mine. And here's the difference, coach. I've coached, so I can help you. You've never reffed, so you can't help me. Now, that's literally what I said.
That's a bar.
So that, you know, I wanted you to know, like, I try not to address statements and only answer questions. But there are times where there's dialogue that needs to be take place. And he didn't like my answer, but I thought I was right. Like, I was correct. It was a very unnecessary foul. There's other ways to stop the clock. And he's sitting there telling me how to do my job. Meanwhile, I turn around. And I say to him, coach, she's still on the floor, by the way. Just for the record, she's still on the floor. You know, like, but I don't know. It goes back to, and I mean, we deviated tremendously from the original situation, but it falls under that umbrella where how do we communicate verbally, non-verbally to coaches that we get it, we understand the implications of our calls, and that as long as we have good positioning or as long as we're working, thriving for good positioning, as long as we have open lines of communication, then I think we're going to improve the game, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so here's how you show him that you know what you're talking about. And in that moment, you're just going to give him rule-based explanations of an intentional foul. So talk to me about some of the criteria of an intentional foul.
Intentional foul is a foul that is deemed excessive, in this situation, excessive and unnecessary, and or it's intended to stop the clock. It's a foul intended to stop the clock where they're not mm-hmm. playing for the ball. They're not going for the ball. Well, that's my understanding.
Yeah, and you hit on a lot of the key terms, and that's your leverage when communicating with the coach. That's what you're leading with. Coach, the safety of the players is our number one concern. We ruled that contact to be unnecessary and excessive. So that's why we had an intentional foul. And I mean, how do you respond to that? He's going to disagree. Okay. But you gave him the rule-based explanation. Right. There's no proving or convincing that you have to do to him. We need to stop trying to convince coaches. If you lead with conviction, you're going to have to convince a lot less, right? Too many times we're getting into opinion battles. That's what I call it. It's an opinion battle. I don't need to prove to you my opinion is right. And I don't care if your opinion is right either. I'm going to give you rule-based science behind it.
Got it. Yeah.
And at the moment I blew the whistle, I'm 100%. So I'm not going to convince you I got it correct. This is the decision I made. And this is how we're moving forward. Here's my explanation. Do you have a question upon that explanation? What did you see?
Got it.
He's obviously throwing spam at you because the game is on the line.
We get that, right? We understand that. Like, I don't have a stake in the game if you think about it. And we kind of do. And I'm not saying I care about my rating or anything like that. No, but you know what? I am taking it upon myself. I'm like I said, I'm trying to break into the college ranks. But while I'm in the process of doing that, I want to be the best varsity official in my board. I'm not saying I am. Yes. I said that's what I'm striving for. So if I'm working on my communication with them, knowing my rules, right? Because that's the other thing. We got to know our rules. We can't just show up and BS our way through it. You know, we got to know what we're talking. Coach, I called the travel because she lifted her pivot and put it back down. You know, not she took too many steps. Yeah. It doesn't say that in the rule book, right? So I'm being mindful, like you said, I am. But there are situations like this one where I hadn't encountered that before in my career. You know what I mean? So that's the other thing. Sometimes these things pop up. It's funny. The other day I worked with an official, and he's a lower level official. And, you know, he said to me, he's like, Fabe, you know, I would love to give me some feedback. Of course, you know, and we're always going to be a little better than someone. And it's good to share our knowledge. Right. But so I brought it to the I like talking about blarges in the pregame. I always bring it up. And I said, listen, good. We already discussed staying in our PCA, so we should not have this issue. However, the game gets going and we have it. Let's know what we're talking about in the event that it happens, so we don't look like two deer in headlights out there. So I bring up, I say, so blarge. And, you know, he's like, what's a blarge? I go, you've never heard of a blarge? He goes, no. I was like, okay, see? So that's an example, right, where he's never encountered it. So why would he hear it if he's never encountered it? And that's my point.
Yeah.
I think that the more games you do, the more you encounter not just travels and things, but sometimes there's these little nuances to the game that happen. And if you've never experienced it, ooh, shit, you better know what you're talking about, right? So in that situation, right. Now going forward, you just helped me, because in a situation where we're, you know, in the final seconds of a game, of a tight game, and I see something like that, now I know not to get into this back and forth, which is unprofessional of me to have said to what I said. You know, I was upset with the way he treated me, but, and I was respectful, I was unprofessional. But I liked what you said. If we stay with the verbiage of the rules in the discussion, what is he going to argue? He can't argue it. He could disagree. He could disagree, right? But that doesn't matter. I mean, the rule says, coach, that was unnecessary and excessive. And unfortunately for your team, we had to upgrade it. So here we are, coach. Two shots, you know, and move on. Rather than, well, I coached and you didn't, you know, like, that was unprofessional of me. And I recognize that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's always good to analyze the conversations with coaches too. Just like we would analyze the play calling.
And I don't think we do that enough just like that.
You know, no. Well, nobody's out here really talking about communication and management and what to say to coaches, when to say it, how to say it. You know, we're kind of left on our own there. So I'm trying to put out as much information as possible and document all the different situations that I encounter, because you're going to encounter it,
right? Correct.
If you haven't already, you know, and the more rule-based explanations we give, the less leverage they have. There's no more leverage when we get outside of what we do best and be as being the experts of the game. That's where we open ourselves up to trouble, because then we go down to their level. Now we're on their level. They can jab and spar back with us. But once we raise our level to book knowledge, something they have know nothing about, something that verbally they can't joust with us if we communicate it correctly. And I'm not saying you
right.
say it
no,
robotically.
I got you. Mm-hmm.
That's where the human touch and communication Correct. Skills come into effect. Now you had a similar play that we discussed earlier.
So yeah, so you know you. I had a similar situation. It was a rec ball. And I mean, I guess not that it matters, but, you know, it's a little bit more of a loose environment, right? So I stopped the game. There was a player. It was a fast break. And it was a player on the offense. I think he went head-to-head on the rebound. So he came out. It was a player on the offense, not on the defense. It was an offensive player. Fast break. It was a 2-on-1 break. And I was the trail. And I look up and I see that they have a chance to score. But I saw blood. What I thought was blood. Honestly, I saw blood. So I stopped them. I stopped
them.
I mean, this kid just went head to head and there's blood. Beep, 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 beep. And then, you know, I point wide possession, division line. I go, coach, we need somebody to come out here. You would think that the coach, instead of being, you know, worried about his player,
I know where you're going.
He's worried that I stopped, you know, a 2-point play.
Doesn't matter. He has a 3-inch gash in his skull.
So as he's coming on the court, he's, and again, right, he's allowed out of his coaching box now because I beckoned him to the player, but he's charging at me.
Here, let me stop you right there. Anytime, and you can continue on, but here's a good rule of thumb. Anytime there's an injured player, get away. Get out of dodge.
just leave, go to the other side of the court and get out of the path of the coach to the player, because they're going to say something to you, especially if you hang out there. They're bringing all of their frustrations to you, and you're a sitting duck.
Well, that's what happened. So him and his assistant coach are coming onto the court. So his assistant coach runs right to the player who had a little cut on their forehead. So there was blood. And the coach now is charging at me. And he's like, how do you kill the play? You're supposed to, you know, wait for the play to end. Right. He's trying to tell me he knows the rule. Right. So all I said to the coach, I said, coach, I understand what you're saying. I said, but in this scenario, there's blood and potential head injury. I'm not playing with that. 2 points, no 2 points. I don't care. So he continued. And at that point, I turned my back and I walked away. Now, my point is, and he didn't follow me. I was in my right with the way his finger in my face, the whole thing. I could have teed him up. And yeah, like, you know.
He put his finger in my face?
Coming at me. Not like in my nose, but, you know, like as he's approaching me, he's pointing at me. So demonstrative should be the
demonstrative
word.
Demonstrative,
yeah. Right? So, you know, again, do I tee him up? He's already irate. You know, I understand where he's coming from, right? I get it. But once I'm saying to myself, once he realizes that I did the right thing, I know he's going to apologize. And guess what? He did. No, I know that.
Don't bank on that.
You're right.
Don't say that. You don't need that. I'm not saying I need an apology.
But my point was, I'm saying to myself, as soon as he realizes that his player is injured, that I did do the right thing, he'll reflect on what he was yelling about. I think that he thought it was like nothing. Like it was just two players who, you know, hit each other on the air. And then I just, you know, I was just quick to the whistle. That was my interpretation at the moment. Because had he seen his player and the blood on the court, he wouldn't have yelled at me like that. I know it. And then he did apologize. Like, oh, I didn't know it was that type of injury. And, you know, I kept it quiet. But again, you know, that was my feel at the moment. That was how I fielded it.
Yeah. Right? Assume coaches know nothing. Just have that assumption. Just assume that they're, you know, uninformed and know nothing. But another thing about that is, where are we supposed to speak to the coach? Where do
we
have our
coaching box area?
Yeah, no. So that's another reason why we got to get out of the way. Now, if you go 40 feet away and he's still yelling and pointing at you, then it becomes so much more obvious that it's like a technical foul. But now that we're in his personal space,
now you're right.
It's just the wrong location, and it leaves us vulnerable to. You know, we become a punching bag. Right. We're just up against the ropes, taking shots.
Paul, listen, my as a teacher, my next period is starting. So,
me too. I guess we better go.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it, and hopefully, some people get something out of this podcast, because this stuff happens a lot.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Feel free to hit us up with any questions at crownrefs@gmail.com. Serve the game.